Questions. Ah, such sweet agony. To not know things which we desire deeply to be privy of. The Big Bang. What happens after you die? Extraterrestrial life. All these questions and more will not, in any way, be answered here. But I got another guest, and we're going to have a conversation about them and life and what have you. So, welcome, mystery guest.
Hello.
Now, before we begin, we got today's sponsor. Today's sponsor are all of the people named Hitler that changed their names after World War II. Good thinking on their part. Okay, so that's a sponsor this week. So obviously, if the audience couldn't tell by how you said hello, you got a bit of an accent.
I do.
It makes you unique among the other guests that I've had that have all more or less been Canadian.
Oh, fantastic. So yes. I'm your first foreigner.
I have had Americans on, okay, so you're not cool. The first foreigner, but as far as accents go, I think you're the first.
Past North America, then.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Over the water, yeah.
Over the pond.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So, could I ask you a bit about that? Some basic,
yeah.
Basic questions?
Let's go
like
for it.
So you were born and raised in England?
Kind of. Okay. I was born in the south of England, near a little town called Brighton, or a city, I suppose, called Brighton.
Nice. Yeah.
And then I moved to the north of England when I was seven, which is like just like northeast Teesside area. Then I moved to Canada when I was 12.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so okay. I lived over in Markham for 2.5 years as a teenager. And then from there, I moved to Memphis, Tennessee.
Tennessee, yeah. Wow.
In America, yeah. So, and I lived there for 3 years. And then, I was 18 when I moved back to the UK. I did a year of university in Memphis, and then I moved back to the UK.
That's so unique. Was that family related, I'm assuming?
Yeah, it was my dad's job. Moved us around a lot. So it is quite a unique childhood in a way. Excuse me. In that I was never really in one place for longer than a few years, which made it quite difficult with like friends and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But now, like looking back, it was like defining, and that's the reason why I live in Canada now, because I hit a stage where I was like, I want to try Canada again.
Yeah, you're able to see all these countries and decide which one you like to the best, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. And it kind of opens your mind in a way so that you're not just in your little bubble of where you grew up and where you're from, because it's so easy to slide into that and being like, well, this is the world.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So it was very cool. I was very, very lucky that I was able to do that when I was younger.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, I mean, to the complete opposite of your entire life, I was born and raised in Burlington and I'm still there to this day. But, like, I guess I'm fortunate in that there's a train in Burlington that can take you to Toronto in, like, an hour, so...
And how was that for you? Because obviously we are on completely opposite ends of the spectrum. So,
yeah.
Do you have friends from when you were
younger?
And they've been your friends since you were young?
Yeah. Well, obviously, they're, you know, you're always transforming when you're growing up. Mm-hmm. Things are changing constantly. But essentially, like my two best friends now,
mm-hmm.
I had met in grade 1 and 2. And then, so from when you're 6 to now,
that's
we've
incredible.
Been friends. But it's like with one of them, I met in grade 1. And we were kind of friends in grade 1. And then we weren't friends in grade 2. And 3, I think. And then we were best friends just the rest of the way. Mm-hmm. And then in grade 2, I became acquaintances with this one guy who came from Australia. And then he doesn't have an accent because he came here when he was like 7.
So yeah.
It's wild how that works. So it's like my theory is that it has something to do with puberty.
Oh, definitely.
Like if you're...
Well, when I lived in Canada...
Depending on the transition period.
When I was younger, when I lived in Canada and I lived in America, my accent wasn't this. It was completely flipped.
Changed.
I had an American accent.
Yeah.
And my parents would like give me so much grief about it because I would have an English accent at home.
Yeah.
And then I would have an American accent when I was with my friends. Sorry, continue.
No. But yeah, that's true. That is interesting how that works, eh? But and then so he had... we'd become acquaintances just... through school or whatever, right? But we didn't really become friends until high school.
Mm-hmm.
And just something clicked. And we were also like neighbors. Like we lived a block away from each other. So it's one of those things where you don't realize until you're like, hey, want to come over? And you're like, oh, you live right here. It's like, I live right there. But yeah, and then that was it. And then...
But that must be so great because I feel like you have people that know you so... know everything about you. And...
Yeah, it's the same as family.
Yeah.
Where it's just casual. And like there can be moments where we don't see each other for months just due to whatever, like vacationing or just job situations or whatever. And then... we see each other again. It's like no time's passed.
That's awesome.
So yeah, yeah, it's good to have those people in your life, I guess.
Oh, definitely.
It's easy living, but I mean, do you feel any amount of stress, or do you feel less stress making friends and having these new kind of situations where you're going out and just meeting people and then?
I think when I first moved over here, I had no stress whatsoever because I had literally grown up moving from one city to another and having, like, that was my automatic.
It was
normal. It was just something that I'm so used to and that you just have to get on with it and meet people and get out there because that's the best way to kind of meet your people and your crew. Yeah. And so even when I first moved to Toronto, a lot of the people that I met weren't necessarily the people that I am now friends with. So it was kind of like friendships out of convenience, and not that reduces our friendships that I made any way, but I think that we don't necessarily have as much in common. It was more that the main thing that we had in common was moving to a new country.
Oh yeah, true.
So yeah. And then once you kind of get settled in that country, you all kind of realize, oh, we don't do the same things and that kind of thing. And so I think that can be a bit of an adjustment, and understanding the difference of friends of convenience and friends who are like you truly connect with and genuine friendships.
Or interests, I guess. We shouldn't say genuine to any of this, but it's like when people use terms like, oh, these people are my friends or these are my best friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people say you can only have one best friend. All these
No,
things.
It's a tier. It's not
can.
A person, it's a tier.
It's just a tier. Yeah, there's different words to be used for it, but it's like, you have basic acquaintances that you can just, you don't spend a lot of time with said person, but like you guys all have the best chemistry, but it's like, it's just whether it's situational or just whatever, you barely see that person, but you guys are good. And then you have people that live near you that you're acquaintances with, where it's like, you wouldn't necessarily want to hang out with them all the time, but they're just good company.
Exactly.
And then you have like friends of the people you hang out with, and then you have like the best friends, and then you might have that God tier, your soulmate, who is not in a sexual way, and then, you know, that's like the level of friendship.
Well, that's how I feel like it genuinely is people who see you as you and just know you so well as a person, and you can spend unlimited amount of time together, and it's like you're fine, you just get on, and it's kind of that soulmate friendship where it's just like, oh, you're my, like truly one of my best friends, and
yeah, like
it's
this
great.
Was meant to be. Like it's just such a good connection. Yeah,
yeah. And that's just so lovely, and it's so human as well, because like everyone's so different, and people have different best pals and that kind of thing, and you just click with different people.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. It's one of the better parts of, I guess, moving and stuff, right? It must be this whole finding a connection, right?
Yeah.
Because again, I don't have much of that. Like the latest thing that happened to me was obviously with my girlfriend. As soon as we started dating, I got to meet her friends, and then her friends of friends, and then it became this social bubble.
Just
that, like,
giant web.
The last time I did that was like 10 years ago. So it's like I hadn't made new friends in so long, and then now it's all happening again, and it's so like, you know, amazing. Like,
well, I feel like that's such a struggle for people who are in their 20s, because after you leave it, for people who do choose to go to university or college or further education, it's a pool of, you have unlimited resources of people that you, new people and people that you can meet. So then when people leave that environment, it is very jarring to go from having like that unlimited resource
of
people that where you can still meet new people even in your final year of university.
Yeah.
Whereas when you leave or college, university, whatever it is that you're doing, it is very jarring to be like, oh,
I'm in a workplace, and
how do I meet new people?
Yeah, exactly. Or just like the people in my work I can't become friends with.
Yeah, and that's the new way to do it, really, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you've done that, I think, at least with one person.
Sorry?
Made a work friend?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I have some really good work friends, actually.
Okay, nice.
So I'm very lucky in that way. I feel like that's something that's becoming more and more important when you're looking for jobs now as well, is that making sure that the culture's there for you.
The workplace environment, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've gone from job to job.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if someone, like, I don't know the right way to word this, but like, with Sam, if she were to look at my work history, it might make her nervous, because it seems like I'm jumpy and I'll just like leave, like I get bored easily and then I leave. But it's like relationship wise, I'm not like that at all. But for work, I have like extreme like ADHD. It's like as soon as I learn how to do the thing, I'm done now. So I'm like, okay, now I'm going to quit and do something else. So it's like I usually only have a job for like a year and then I just jump to something else.
And I feel like that's something that's very unique, but also very beneficial to you as a person, because it means
I'm never bored. You know,
you're never bored. The thing, right? Jack of all trades.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I am. I mean, I've done lots of jobs. I've been a landscaper, an arborist. You know, I've worked in sales. I've worked all over the place. But yeah, and it's just it's interesting the types of people you meet. Like there are certain places where it's like I love the job, but the people in the job I can't stand because it's essentially certain demographics that have job types, right?
Oh, like definitely.
In sales, there are certain people that work in sales, and then in labor, there are certain people that work in labor.
Yeah.
So I was able to get comfortable enough in a driving job because I wasn't seeing too many people. It's like you would see your workmates for like the first few hours, but then you would go off driving and you're just on your own.
Yeah.
And so I found that to be the job I held on to the longest. I had that job for 2 years, which is like now the max I've ever had a job. And then I quit. And then now I'm trying to get into the entertainment industry, which is extremely volatile. That's where it's like 3 days you're working a job and then you're nothing. And then you're working another job and you meet all these new people. But yeah, it's having a good workplace environment, I think, is almost even more important than the job itself. If you can find a great group of people doing the like doing sewer work or something, you can have a better life than working this job where you're like a millionaire, but you're just everyone around you is completely toxic. So it's
Definitely.
It's interesting how that kind of works, right? Because we base our lives off of jobs almost, right? That's the base of it. And then you try to build a life off of that, right?
So well, that's where you're spending all of your time. Like if you think about
the majority
of
like. Your time.
I would say like 70 to 80% of maybe a little less, maybe I overwork a little bit, but like somewhere between 60 to 80% of your time is going to be spent at work. And you want that environment to be somewhere that you feel comfortable because it also has ramifications on the rest of your life as well. Because if you're in a place of work where the entire day you are stressed, you are on edge because of someone that maybe a boss or maybe a coworker or something like that, you're taking that home.
You can't
it's shake
impossible,
it.
Yeah.
And then for people who also have poor home environments as well, they just don't get to relax. And you don't, it also means that you can't progress in your job or it's so easy to get stuck in that because it's such a toxic cycle of, well, I am not happy at work. I'm not happy at home. And you're
it's
not
like
getting
you're holding
that.
Your breath.
Yeah.
And then it's like only on weekends you get wasted and then the week starts again.
Yeah.
And there's no actual place where you can mature or actualize yourself or whatever, right? Try to grow as a person. You just get stuck in this cycle.
Yeah. And it's that, and it's so easy to get into that and get stuck in that. And it's very, I feel like it can be very difficult to kind of have that self-analysis as well, where you're like, oh,
am I not happy? Yeah.
And what is it that's causing me to be unhappy? And identifying those specific things and then making those changes, because it's so difficult to do. And then on top of that, it's like, say, for example, living situation you're unhappy in. Then you've got to find somewhere else to live. And then that's a job in itself. Getting like rent these days is wild. Cost of living's crazy. So it's just, it's so many little things. So it's so easy to get stuck in a place where, and it's so easy to just be unhappy these days. And it just requires so much like self-analysis that's really difficult to do when you don't have the time or the patience or the mental space to do that. So
exactly. That was my big thing with where I was working, is that I like to think of myself as being like having a creative personality or whatever, right? Like I've written
I would say that you're creative.
And the job I was working is just the opposite of that. It's very structured and there's no room to do anything, right? It's not like I'm a chef and I get to create new recipes or something for the restaurant. It's like you literally take a package, deliver the package. And so I was happy with how I was making money, doing something where I didn't have to work in a toxic environment because I just am only there for a short period of time. And then the majority of the day I'm just with myself so I can just listen to podcasts or whatever.
Yeah.
But it clearly was taxing mentally because like as soon as I was done, I was just exhausted and I want to watch TV or whatever, right? I didn't give myself any time after to like do as much writing or something, right? It's like I would lose that kind of time inside myself. So I figured the best way for me to continue pursuing my own happiness is to quit that job without finding another job, especially because, like, the way contract work goes is it just comes up, like, the day before the job and goes, hey, you want this job? So it's, yeah, I definitely took a jump with that, and I think most people would disagree with the method of how I did it, where I literally just quit and I was like, okay, now I'll try and find work. But it's worked out so far in the fact that I'm not homeless. I haven't moved out yet because I haven't found a sustainable enough income, but it's coming. It's all about building up relationships in the business and that kind of stuff. But
and yeah, if you have that opportunity to be in a place where you can just quit a job and just look for other things, why not? Why would you not? Because we're only in this stage of our lives, and I say 20s,
developmental years of your adult life.
It's that's a great way of putting it, because it's these early stages that really kind of defines what you're going to do onwards. Just like your just like childhood, everything is a reflection of what you have done before. So being able to recognize that you're unhappy and just being like, okay, this is a risk, but it's a risk that's worth it for me and my personal growth is huge.
So, good for you. Obviously, it's like something not everyone can do. So it's a little unfair in that sense, where it's not like I would never advise anybody to do what I did, because it's like, obviously, if you have a place that you're living in, you can't do that, right? Like, so
it's a privileged opportunity to have, but it's great that you're able to do that for yourself.
But so now more about you.
Oh yeah.
So you came to Canada.
Yes.
You finished schooling, and then did you immediately try to pursue what you went to school for in Canada?
So my degree's in psychology. So I'd studied that in the UK. Mm-hmm. I originally wanted to be a child psychologist.
Well, that's the most important type, right? As some might say.
I agree. I wish I had the, I think the biggest issue for me personally was I'm just not a great student. I'm a very practical learner. I like to be doing everything, and that's just the best way I learn. And I think that's how the schooling system can be flawed. But that's a whole other conversation. But I do work best by learning on the job. So a child psychologist job is a lot of school, and I was just like,
exactly an apprenticeship.
I finished university and I was like, I cannot do another 7 years of this. It's too much of my mental health. So I took a step back. And then I worked in the UK for a while. My first job out of university was, working, door to door on, charity. I hated it.
I can't understand people who would ever enjoy that. I hate answering the door to that. I can tell the person doesn't like it because everyone's
it's like no one wants to be here right now. Neither of us want to be having this conversation, I'm sorry that this is my job. It was just one of those jobs that was the only job that was available at the time. And I wanted to stay living in the city where I went to university. And so it also paid a base wage, which was quite rare for for those door-to-door jobs, which is why to me it wasn't as bad, because I would only sign up people who I felt really wanted to donate to charity and were in a position where they could donate to charity. But I know that there was definitely people who were on the team that I worked in that would definitely took advantage of people who shouldn't be in the position to donate to charity. And that was one of my biggest things that made me go, I need to be out of this. Along with being outside. I had one day when it was the biggest storm that had hit this city, like, in so long, and it was pouring rain. And we were still outside knocking on doors. They didn't let us go home.
Oh yeah, we're canceled. Yeah.
And I was I was walking in water that was up to my knees.
Oh my God, really? What? It was like flooding. That's insane.
It was flooding, and wasn't allowed to be sent home. And it hit a point where I was like, this isn't worth it. I'm leaving. I didn't even quit the job. I just left the shift because I was like, no, this is, I if I could report this to the government, and I'm pretty sure I could get some money for it. Yeah. That kind of thing. This isn't legal.
Yeah.
And I remember that my team leader at the time, who was, he had, was previously in the army. So this gives you the vibe of this guy.
Like, exactly. Get in the mud. Like, there's no such thing as a bad thing. Yeah.
And I needed to go to the bathroom, like, so badly.
Yeah.
And, like, all of the public restrooms, all of, like, everything was closing because it was so bad. It was such a bad storm. And he was like, it will warm you up. Just pee. And this was when we were walking in, like, water up to our knees.
And also, how old are you? Are you, like, in your early 20s, or are you...
I would have been 20, 21, 22.
And he's just looking at you saying, pee your pants.
And he's just saying, pee your pants. Like, it'll warm you up, and we're walking in the water anyway, no one will know.
It's like, you're not a survivalist. You can go into a house. This isn't like, you know, you're not in the wilderness.
So that was one of the jobs that I left pretty swiftly from there. And then I got a position in a market research company, just doing cold calling and doing surveys, which I actually really enjoyed because it was
one
of those things.
Better than having to sell someone, right?
Yeah, you don't have to do it either. Like, it's you just call up and you're like, hey. We're doing a survey for blah, 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 blah. Would you be interested in answering a few questions? And a lot of the time they're like, are you selling anything? And I'm like, no. And they're like, yeah, sure. And
yeah, that's my mentality.
And you give them the amount of time that the survey will take, and they'll be like, yeah, sure. Yeah. So I quite enjoyed that. And then I got a position in, working in marketing and communications. And I didn't enjoy that position very much. I was there for a year, but it was a very male dominated office.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And
that kind of environment.
And it was back in, like, this was well before, like, Me Too movement and all of that kind of stuff. And it wasn't like nothing happened in that way, but it was just more that there was certain expectations of me where it was like, oh, Megan, can you go make us a cup of tea?
And I'm like, oh my God. That's not even like, that doesn't even make sense as far as sexism goes of that time.
It's, I know.
Because, like, I was listening to a podcast earlier, like a few days ago,
mm-hmm.
where it was, they were talking about, like, situations with the Me Too movement where there was one woman who, her and a friend of hers had an apartment in New York City, which is an amazing situation to have, trying to, like, sell or I think get a roommate or something like that. So they're, like, able to set the wages and rates and stuff.
Yeah.
And they had this guy, this older guy, like, in his 40s or something, come over and say, and this was, like, in the 90s or something, and she was, like, her and her friend were, like, in their 20s. And he was like, oh, well, I think this is going to be great. And, like, they thought it was going to be great and stuff. And then, like, near the end, where, like, they're almost, like, shaking his hand. He's like, and, like, we can have a situation where, like, you know, like, I'll pay for the groceries and you girls go get it and then you can make us something and then, you know, like, I'll maybe help clean up, but you guys make the food. And then they're like, what are you talking about? What living situation do you expect to have? Like, you're just living over there. We're not doing your dishes for you. Like, it was so weird. And they're just laughing at that because it's like, that's not even offensive. That's just stupid. Like, that guy's literally living in the 1910s and thinks this is normal. It's weird how that can keep going so long as it's in an inside environment, like if it's in a workplace, right? Or it's like, oh, we set the rules here. Like, it's not, you know, this isn't society. This is this office.
Yeah.
Because I think golf courses have that too, where it's like, cops don't even go on. It's like a whole different world. It's like a different country entering certain areas. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where they can set their own rules and it's like they live in their own sort of society. It's creepy.
It's wild. And that's what it was like. It was the office environment was, everyone in leadership were men. And I wasn't really trained properly either, so it was interesting.
It was giving bad vibes.
I think I was very overexcited about it originally because it felt like my first professional job, and at the time I was like, okay, I've got to work as hard as possible and, like, really prove myself and that kind of thing. So whenever they would ask me to do anything, I would drop what. And to reflect on that environment, it would be whenever the boss asks you to do something, you drop what you're doing and you do it. Yeah. And it's not a great sign of a leader, because a leader should be part of the team. They're not a dictator. They're still part of the team. A leader, while yes, they're helping people, guide people what they're supposed to be doing, you're still part of the team. So to say to someone, whenever this person asks you to do something, you've got to drop everything that you're doing and do it for them.
Like, what if you're doing something important that exactly. you should be dropping? It's like, that's not a very practical mindset.
Exactly. And it undermines your priorities as well.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, you're not trusting me to manage my own time. I understand the priorities and how things work, but I shouldn't be dropping everything
yeah.
to make you a cup of tea. Can I swear on this?
Yeah, yeah, okay. absolutely. Yeah, okay. fuck yeah. It doesn't happen too often, but it's completely allowed, yeah.
okay.
I swear I've had a few episodes where there's no swearing and I still get the explicit notice on it when it shows up on a podcast. They just know. They're like, you know, secret podcast, that's where.
You never know. Yeah. It's just one of those things that comes a bit more naturally, but I could feel myself starting to say the F word and I was like, I don't know if I should hold back.
No, but no, yeah, okay, don't worry about holding back. But so at this point, you're working in this marketing company, you're still in England.
Yes.
And this is still in your early 20s?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that was a contract position, and then that ended, and then I was unemployed for 3 months, and it was...
I've been there.
It was rough. It was really rough. I was on the dole, as they call it in England, which is like benefit EI.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
So... for non-UK or Canadian, so I was on welfare benefits, getting money from the government to help support myself.
Yeah.
And I was miserable. I was so miserable, and it just felt like there was no light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, you question your own value in society. You go, wait, what if I'm just like this, you know?
You do, and it's very interesting. Actually, something that stuck with me that a psychology professor told me this, like this was years ago, but it's always stuck in my head, and it's... remember that employers are paying for what's in your head. They don't know you as a person, but they're paying for what is in your brain. Like, and that's literally, it's so true. And it always shifts me back and I'm like, no, I know what I'm doing. I have that knowledge and that kind of thing. Yeah. I just have to kind of show that when it comes to interviews or comes to cover letters and that kind of thing. But yeah, so I was unemployed for 3 months and that was really rough. I interviewed for a marketing position for a company that did that made locks and lock boxes, and they offered me the job probably about 2 hours after I had the interview. Like it was very fast. I got like an offer straight away.
Yeah.
And that was when I was like, I don't want to do this. And were telling me,
I know I'm unemployed, but I don't want to do this. Yeah.
They were like, oh, well you can write blogs about the newest lock boxes that are coming out. And I was like, I would rather watch paint dry.
Yeah, seriously.
Oh my gosh. So that was when I consulted with my dad, who I value his professional opinion very much. He's like,
because
he
knows what he
does. So he's in engineering, but he's like kind of in, he's worked his way up. He works so hard. So does my mum as well. They're both very hard workers, which I think I got my work ethic from them.
Yeah, definitely absorbed in you as a kid. Yeah.
Definitely. So, especially when it comes to job advice and that kind of thing, I do talk to my parents a lot, and I'm quite lucky in that way that they're very supportive.
Yeah.
So I talked to my mum and my dad, and I was like, "Yeah, I got offered this job, and I know I'm unemployed, but I don't want it." And they were like, "Then don't take it. You don't have to take the first job that comes up. You have the luxury of being able to, like, right now you're receiving, you're getting benefits and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Go with that until you're getting to a position, like get to a position of where you're 80% sure on the job. If you're 80%, if you're like, and I was literally like at 20% on this job. I did not, I think I applied for it because it said marketing in the title and I was just like, okay, let's just apply for it.
Yeah.
But so I didn't take that job. Nice. And then my career kind of shifted because I got a job as a
nice.
I just knocked over something, so it's fine. So my career shifted because I then got a job as a careers advisor for young people. So
nice.
I didn't know what I wanted to do, so that somehow made me qualified to help other people with what they wanted to
do. Perfect, absolutely, yeah.
But actually, what's very interesting about working in careers advice is it's not really about the advice that you're giving. It's the questions that you're asking people. And it's asking the right kind of questions to help them figure out what they want to do. Because I can't tell you what you want to do.
Yeah, no.
And I would have like 13-year-olds come to me and be like, can you tell me what I can do as a job? And I'm like, well, no, I can't.
Yeah,
can
first, you, what do you like?
What do you like? Yeah. What do you, what is important to you in a job? Are you wanting a job where you can do not put in 9 to 5 and then leave and prioritize the rest of your life? Or do you want to be passionate about your job? And a lot of the times when you are very passionate about your job, you're sacrificing other things in your life because that's going to take over a bit more of your life than you may think.
Yeah.
So, I did that for just over a year, and then I moved to Toronto.
Nice, very good. And how was that transition? Because obviously you've been in Canada before, but you were in Markham.
Yeah, I was in Markham.
Were you thinking of going back to Markham?
I wasn't. I think, for me, I think in my mind, Markham was always a lot closer to Toronto than I thought.
Okay.
Because
well,
when
kind
we,
of. I mean, you could take a subway or.
Oh,
something.
I think you can. Well, you can get the go train. Yeah.
Okay, you can. Yeah.
And while I think it's definitely still close, but I think I was thinking, oh, it's gonna be like a 20-minute bus ride, and I can go see some old friends and that kind of thing. But I think it's because when we were younger and we would travel into Toronto, it never felt like that long. Or I'm not paying attention. I'm in the on my Game Boy in the back.
Yeah,
of the car.
You had a Game Boy?
Oh yeah. Yes.
Did you have the Game Boy Pocket or Color?
I had the Color, and nice. I had a yellow one.
I was always jealous of the Color people. Yeah, I had a. I think it was red, and it was just Game Boy Pocket.
Oh, nice.
So I've never even seen a Game Boy before, but they were apparently a lot bigger, and it went from the Game Boy to the Game Boy Pocket.
Mine was like
to the
a smaller
Color.
One. I would say probably about 6 inches, probably. Yeah, the Game Boy Color, the handheld ones.
And then the thickness, I think, the thinner ones were the newer ones. So yeah, that's probably what we had, yeah.
Yeah, so it would just be on the Game Boy in the back of the car, so it wasn't really paying attention to where we were going. Saw the CN Tower, and I was like, oh, we're here.
Yeah, when you see the big buildings, you know you're good. Yeah.
Exactly.
Nice.
So, when I moved over here, it wasn't necessarily... I think, like, thinking back, doing that is a bit wild. Like I'm just like, oh,
uncertainty. That's like, would you do that now? Do you want to go to America right now?
No, probably not America. I think the thing is I'm very much where I'm supposed to be, which is very nice. And
absolutely,
I'm very happy with where I am. And although I'd love to explore other parts of the world, most definitely, I think home base for me, at least for the foreseeable future, is Toronto.
Yeah, nice. That's great.
Yeah. I'm happy about it. But the transition was interesting. I stayed in a hostel for a few months when I first moved over.
I don't know if they're called hostels here. I think that's a European saying. Yeah. There's just inns, motels, hotels.
No, it's a hostel here.
There's hostels in Toronto?
Yeah.
And they're called a hostel, like on the building. It's a hostel.
Yeah, it's called the hostel I stayed at in Toronto, which I highly recommend, and maybe a slight plug for them, but they're called
plugs are free here, so.
Planet Traveler.
Planet Traveler.
Planet
Maybe
Traveler.
That's why they're called hostels. Because they're meant for people who go to hostels.
They're meant for people who like just no come word, over and travel, yeah.
Yes.
For my first three months? Wait, I moved here in February. So it's actually 5 years or a week on Monday is my 5 year anniversary.
Yeah. nice. It's good that works.
It does.
Yeah.
And then, I'm trying to think. I moved out, so moved in February, and then I moved into a new place in April. So from February to April, I was staying in a hostel and staying
That's
in a room
wrong.
With, like, five other girls.
Wow, nice.
Ugh.
Okay, it was bad. Yeah.
I mean, it was
good.
What was the
pricing like?
The pricing was good. It worked out probably... I mean, the prices probably aren't the same anymore because one, I came over here in the winter, so that automatically makes it cheaper.
Yeah.
And then
the economy radically spiked in Toronto.
Is great for hostels because they're probably making bank. But I think it worked out around $16 a night, which I think converted to about just over $800 a month, which is like. Which is
I
rent.
I should live there right now.
Yeah.
That's better than rent. I mean, yeah.
But you are sharing a room with however many other people.
A couple strangers.
Yeah, quite a few strangers. Which is okay when you're staying there long term because you can get in one specific room and then you've already made friends so you will request to stay in the same room for a while.
Yeah.
And it works in that way. But there was definitely one weekend when I got moved into a co-ed room. And because they just didn't have the availability of female-only dorms. And It was the night before I started a new job, well, like one of my temp jobs in Toronto. And it was like the first day of work and I didn't sleep at all because there was someone who was in the room who just was the loudest snorer
I have ever heard in my life. I thought you were about to say he was like staying up or he's like just creeping the halls or something.
No, nope,
just snoring. Snoring. So there's nothing you can do about that. Yeah.
So loud. And like I grew up with I've got two brothers, and so I'm really used to like, and especially when we moved around when we were younger, we would first stay in hotels, and I would share a hotel room with my brothers. So if one of my brothers was snoring, I would literally just get up out of bed, punch him in the arm, they wake up, and I go back.
You can go to sleep. Hopefully, by the time they go back to sleep.
But you can't do that with strangers.
Yeah.
Not so much. I think I'd get a
complaint. You gotta make friends with them, and then you can.
Essentially.
Probably
so.
Do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nuts. And then, so now here you are. Fast forward. You got 5 years. Yeah, 5 years.
Yeah.
When did you meet your current roommate? His name will not be disclosed.
His name will not be disclosed, but who has also been on this podcast already, I believe.
That's true.
So I met her a good few years ago now, actually. So it's funny because I never used to be a person who believed in fate. However, I feel as though I am very lucky in the way that things have worked out for me because things have just fallen into place, which when things are easy in that way, it makes me think that I'm doing the right thing. Like if things are a struggle constantly, there's something that isn't quite right. So with my current roommate, I met her through two of my previous roommates.
Okay, nice.
Who are also our friends.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if we can name the mansion, but is that where it all started?
So that's where it all started. So okay, that's nice. The mansion.
So I'm kind of close to when you guys met, or
yeah cool. Definitely. I moved into a house with a Welsh person, an English person, and an Irish person, which is like a joke, essentially.
Yeah, it sounds like a sitcom. Yeah.
And it was, because it was all of us moving. We didn't really think it through. We moved into this empty house. None of us had furniture because we were all brand new to the country. So lived there for a year and then they all moved out. So that would have been 2016. And so I needed to find a new place. And I found this listing on Kijiji.
Yeah, classic Canadian
Canada's site. Marketplace.
Absolutely.
Online marketplace.
Yeah.
Little plug for you there, Kijiji. Yeah. And I met our two friends, went over to view their place, and I like fell in love with it straight away. I was like, I'd already viewed a few places already, and I'd never kind of felt at home in them, and I was like, I can't really see myself living here. Or they had like there was one place that had the bedroom that I would be taking over had a back patio connected to it. So great.
Yeah.
But the roommate who I would have been moving in with, she was like, oh, well, we'll want to walk through and use the patio a lot.
No. I'm like, you take the bedroom and then I'll take you.
I'm not very clean. Sometimes there's underwear places and it's like, I don't really want you just walking through whenever.
Yeah.
So that was a solid no. And then I viewed another place where the person had lived there for 5 years. So it felt very much like their place. And I was like, I don't want to look. I'm going to feel like a visitor.
An outsider. Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't be able to make it your own. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So then when I met our two friends, I got there and the place was great and it was so clean. And it was also two guys, which is... A lot of people were like, oh, you're
that
moving in with
auspicious.
two guys from Kijiji, you're moving in with them.
Sounds
and I was like,
yeah.
Yep.
<That's> my mom, if you met them,
my mom was a bit nervous, but
yeah.
And the big thing is as I mentioned earlier, I've got two brothers. So for me, living with guys has always been a staple. It's been just normal for me. So, and I feel like that's a place of comfort for me as well.
And plus they probably weren't giving you any eerie vibes.
No. I was like, let's find the creepiest people.
Yeah, exactly.
So I feel like me and those two guys, we got along very, very well, from the get go. Now after obviously now we're friends and everything, they said that so it was between me and another English person, but a guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
um and And apparently the deciding factor was our friend who really likes playing board games. He had mentioned, oh, well, we have our friends over quite a bit and we'll play board games and that kind of thing. We're looking for a roommate who would want to get involved with that. And I was just like, yes, please, I need friends.
What, and the guy said no to that? Or maybe he wasn't as enthusiastic.
I think, I just don't think he was as enthusiastic. I think probably, maybe has already made his friends in Toronto. I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I already had friends, but I was always open to meeting new people. And so, yeah, so they chose me and I moved in and it was great. Yeah, we all got along. I don't think we really had any massive issues. We're all still friends. So,
absolutely. Yeah, that's the thing. Looking back, it's like, well, clearly it was a good choice, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And this is the thing where it all kind of falls into place as well, because then I met my current roommate and she, because she's friends with the two guys that I previously lived with.
Yeah.
And... and then things kind of just kept on falling into place for us. So like the last place that we lived in, the rooms opened up right at the right time. And although we were definitely ready to get out of that, the last place that we were in, it was still like perfect for what we needed when we first moved in. So
the mansion or
the last place that myself
yeah.
and unnamed roommate were in.
Yes,
so
yeah.
But yeah.
And then now here we are. Yeah.
And now so here we are in a new place. It's all kind of fallen into place.
And then work wise, that's all in a good situation.
I got very lucky because I moved positions. It would have been nearly a year ago now.
Okay.
Yeah. So my last company I was with, I was there for 4 years, but I had no progression whatsoever. I mean, I got bumped up slightly in terms of title, but they didn't.
You knew it wasn't.
They didn't satisfy that monetary amount either. So.
Oh yeah, that's not fun. I'd rather take money than title.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't think anyone would differ. Yeah.
So I actually took a title drop in my last place in my going into my current role, but I got paid more. So I was like, well, I don't.
That's a hard yes. Yeah,
I will have to say yes to that. Thank you very much. Awesome. So yeah, I'm very happy in my current job. I'm very busy, but I'm a lot happier. And again, that I feel like that reflects on life in general as well. Like now I'm really solidly in a place where I'm like, oh, cool. This is what life is like.
This is my life. And
this is kind of nice now.
Good.
My shit is slowly coming together. Like it's still in little piles around me, but the shit is slowly coming in.
Absolutely.
And together.
Yeah.
So,
the game of life, you're leveling up one day at a time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it takes time as well. It's like, it's why it's so important not to compare yourself to others as well, because
of course,
everyone has different tracks. And...
Yeah. And plus, like, you're not going to see the full picture anyway, so the comparison you're making is essentially an illusion, right?
Exactly.
Especially if you're using social media or just them telling you.
Yeah.
It always seems better than what it really is, so it's not a true comparison anyway.
Yeah, social media is interesting, isn't it?
It is. It's a tool, but I honestly think for the most part it's being used wrong. It's terrible.
I can see that. I think it's very important to...
in general, to stay connected, especially if you have family.
Like I wouldn't have Facebook if I didn't have to keep in contact with my family. But it's just, it's one of those things where I think it's so important to unfollow people that make you feel sad. Like if you ever hit a post and it makes you feel bad about yourself, that's when you go, nope, bye. Like I don't have time for that. Like take that out of your newsfeed.
Yeah. I do that. For me, I use Instagram more than Facebook.
Yeah.
And I do that all the time where it's like, I'll follow anyone who wants to follow me unless it seems like a bot or something. I'm completely open and just letting everyone see my life. But then like, once I get the feed and stuff and start seeing them, I've done this to like maybe too many people now, I just mute it. So like, I don't unfollow them. I'm like, I don't care about your life. Like, I'm not going to, you know.
See, I'm like, I'm too harsh. I'm like, nope, you're getting unfollowed. Goodbye.
Yeah, canceled.
Goodbye. Yeah. So, but it's very... It's sad though, because I know so many people that get deeply affected by social media, and it's so important to remember that that's everyone's highlight reel. Like,
yeah,
I'm not posting the times when I'm crying in bed with pizza.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good example.
Hey, selfie.
Yeah, like, here we go. Now's the perfect time to show people my low life. Yeah.
Instagram live it.
Yeah, exactly.
This is me in in my absolute worst.
Yeah.
So that's such an important thing to kind of keep in mind when people are on social media, I think.
Yeah. So, social media is a cautionary tale, right? I mean, just with life in general and how people see other people.
It is.
So we are about 3/4 done the podcast, as far as my time limit goes.
Wow. Okay.
So now that we've talked about your life and people got a good grasp,
okay,
is it okay if I ask you some opinion questions?
Of course.
Yes. Okay.
Let's go.
So this one, you can obviously say past any of them.
Okay.
But it's always interesting to ask people these things just to kind of get their opinion on it. I mean, that's essentially the whole point of this show that I'm doing is to just, you know, talk to people and then see how they think about things. So,
okay.
This one, I should get rid of it, but I just have it here as the first one.
No, let's go.
What is your opinion on a racialized society? Ooh. The concept of that. Because I'm sure you've heard the term colorblind, and then other people saying being colorblind is BS, because obviously you can see that people look different.
Yeah.
But what do you think about the reality of our society right now, is that it's a racialized one?
I think it's very important to recognize race, because it's very easy to say, oh, I'm colorblind or whatever, but the world isn't, how the world is.
And politics currently aren't.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that people have had so many negative effects because of their race. Like, for example, I'm a white woman. And yes.
Your identity's revealed.
Yeah. Oh, no. Well,
we know who you are now.
Yeah. We all know who I am. So I'm a white woman. And while I definitely don't have the same privileges as a white man, I'm very aware of the fact that I have far more privilege than a black woman who's my counterpart.
Yeah, and in the exact same thing.
And that's why it's so important to recognize race and celebrate diversity and that kind of thing. And that's one of the things that I love about Toronto so much. Well, it's definitely problematic, and I know that racism is still very prevalent in the GTA and in Canada overall.
And in the places of power too, which sucks to say. Yeah, but it's true.
But I think it's definitely further along than a lot of places, especially south of the border.
Yes.
and even in the UK as well, like, I'm not even touching Brexit. Thank you. It's very, racialized society is so important, but it's very important to recognize that and celebrate diversity but make sure that we're being inclusive and helping, lifting other people up who may not necessarily have the same privileges as us. Yeah.
Because, that's and I don't think this is being said enough, but I've heard it from one podcast, The Armchair Expert, if you've heard of that.
Yes, with Dax Shepard, yeah.
And I've never heard it the way that he said it before, but it's the best way to say it is that, like, a lot of people get offended whenever you say there's white privilege or something, because it's like, if someone living in a trailer park, they go, what fucking privilege do I have? But the privilege aspect, another way to put it is it's not privilege in that you get things, it's privilege in that you aren't being taken down because of where you are. Where it's like, everybody has problems, financial problems, relationship problems, the world, like, forgetting them, any of that kind of stuff. It's like every race deals with that. It's just the privilege part is that you don't also have to get constantly stopped by the police or be ignored by people like in a
You're not followed around in a store.
Yeah, like tons of stuff like that. It's like it's the fact that you don't have to deal with additional problems because of how you were born genetically. So that's the one place to put it. And then also as far as colorblindness goes, I feel like people who use the term colorblindness, because I don't, but it's like the people who say it, I feel like what they really mean is that they understand from a scientific standpoint that race is it was made up.
Yeah. Because
it's like there are shades of color.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like,
it's like gender as well.
Why do you place that this is black and then this is white when clearly there's like a gradient? It's a spectrum. Yeah, like the same as gender, where it's like there's a clear difference of like a suede of colors. It's like it's not just blocked like this and then this and then this.
Yeah.
It's like tons of it. It's like genetic code is wild, right?
Well, everything's a spectrum. Like,
yeah.
Sexuality is a spectrum.
That's one of the biggest spectrums, I think. Yeah, that's one of the ones massive. That we have not nearly know enough about.
Because, like,
you know.
No, I feel like it's very difficult to be like, yes, I am 100% straight. I think there's percentages. Like, this was when I was in university, actually, one of my friends who identifies as bi, but she is like, no, I'm into like, I'd say 80%, 20%. So like, for the most part, she likes women, but the other 20%, she'll date a guy. So it's just kind of that kind of thing. It's a spectrum. And it's the same with like mental health. the autism spectrum, all of these kinds, everything's a spectrum. So
And that's definitely like the thing with gender, because most people say there's only two, and it's like, as far as reproductive systems go, there's a vagina and a penis. Mm-hmm. There's no other options there.
Yeah.
It's just in between those two extremes, right?
Yeah.
But as far as gender goes, it's like, I'm definitely not a stereotypical male. Like I don't have, like, I'm not hypermasculine or anything, right? Like, as far as testosterone and estrogen goes, it's like, I'm definitely a feminine male, but I'm still a male, you know?
Yeah.
Where it's like, so it's like, if that is on a spectrum, it's like, I'm 60-40 or something like that, right?
And that, but I think that's
100%.
What's interesting is that's the social construct side of it. Like, yes, there's the biological, I feel like this is where the, kind of where the conflict happens, is because I know that there's a lot of people that feel very strongly in that gender can't be on a spectrum. Yes, sexual organs, 100%. There's
two or both, because that can still happen.
It can still happen.
I don't think none can happen.
But it's the social construct of what is femininity. When people are saying, oh, he's an effeminate boy. And it's like, no, he's just a boy who likes these things that traditionally have been associated with women. However,
the dumbest example is like color. It's like, are you kidding me? Pink and blue? That's the stupidest thing.
And in other pink was originally for boys.
Yeah.
Fun fact, pink was originally used for boys. I don't remember specifically why. I would have to fact check myself, but I think pink was originally for boys.
It
flipped at some point.
Yeah, somewhere in our century, or at least in the 1900s. And then another one is makeup and high heels and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Those were Egyptian male kings and princes.
Yeah.
And then the females started doing it, sneaking into their cabinet and stuff. And then the guys didn't like it anymore because the girls were doing it. So then makeup became a female thing.
Yeah.
But then now, at this turn of a century, guys are doing it a lot more. And you can see makeup channels on YouTube or whatever.
Yeah.
Guys are fucking love makeup. And it's like,
it's
becoming a more neutral thing where it has nothing to do with gender. So it's the tide is turning. More research is being done in the sciences of psychology and biology and all this fun stuff. So we're moving in the right direction, even if it seems like we're not.
Yeah.
And actually, that goes to my the next opinion I have here. What is your opinion on the current state of the world?
Oh, well, I'm a bit sad about it. I think I feel like everyone has this little bit of sadness that's just always in the back of their... I was going to say head, but like, it's kind of like, it hurts my heart a little bit. Like,
it's more emotional than it is statistically.
I'm just genuinely sad that I feel like if people were just more kind to each other and were more considerate, I think that can change the world. And just think of others and realize that your experience isn't the only experience. And while your experience, yes, is definitely valid, it doesn't mean that your experience is more valid over someone else's.
Yeah.
And that's such a big issue. And I feel like there's not going to be any massive changes until there's a change in leadership, unfortunately, because it has to start at the top.
Culture and follows
there's
that.
all this shit about like us, like stop using straws and like people becoming like more socially conscious and of everything they're doing. And that is 100% important. However, it's not us. It is these big corporations that are dodging tax, their taxes.
Criminally. And they're just like, they're in the pocket of lawmakers, so they don't go to jail for it. It's insane how it works.
And it's literally the truth as well, which is so, it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
Because you can see, this is not a lie. It's like, it's not like, oh, it's rumored that Amazon have dodged some taxes. They have literally dodged taxes in like so many countries, and it's just doesn't if they contributed that, there'd be so much more. I don't know, it's frustrating. It's just frustrating. It's exhausting. I really try to not get too involved, because I feel like
it would just upset you,
it makes
right?
you
especially
so
as
sad.
One person. Yeah, what can you do if you didn't get into law or politics? What can you do
exactly?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you watch Hassan Minhaj, The Patriot Act. Highly recommend it. It's on Netflix. But at the end of last year, I think he said, he said, going forward, it's too impossible to be, we can't care about absolutely everything. He was like, so what I ask of my viewers going forward into next year, think of two or three things, of two or three causes that you are passionate about and is important to you, and make those changes to help that. So say, for example, climate change, yeah, or inequality, whatever you choose, try and work, just like do little things that will help that.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's an easier way of doing things, like block out the rest of it, because otherwise I feel like everyone would just be so depressed. They'd go mad.
Yeah, yeah. And especially because not everyone feels that way. Not everyone feels bad about what's happening in the world. There's so many selfish people that
I know
love when bad things happen to other people. They're like sadists, right? They go, yeah, yeah, like let's bomb Iran. And it's like wait, whoa.
Ugh.
Whenever there's team, like tribalism, I guess, is yeah, the worst part of humanity. That is instinctual, so it'll never go away. But it's like, if we can find a way to mediate it as much as possible,
yeah,
to make a better world.
That, and the internet didn't help with that, because it just...
Yeah, unfortunately,
it's
no.
It's just like minds, just... they like, and it's so... And this is... I was discussing this with my colleague the other day, is yeah, that we ourselves are quite liberal and have that kind of view. So it's very easy to surround yourself with people, especially in social media and that kind yeah, of thing, with the people that you follow. And you just assume that everyone's like...
That's people, the default of that's humanity. Yeah.
People are moving in that direction, and it's not necessarily true. And I feel like yeah, it's very difficult to gauge, because as well as that, a lot of people are afraid to state their opinions now in the yeah, fear of like getting just ripped online, like whether they go one way or the other, because people attack people for no reason online.
Yeah.
And I think it's very easy to forget that people are people, and that there's yeah, people behind the computer when you're talking to them. So
yeah, and plus also some people might not be fully informed. So it's yeah, not, you know, they're not necessarily being like arrogant. They might just be ignorant. It's like there's yeah, a big difference between the two.
Yeah.
Of them like stating something that's factually incorrect. It's like, then try to tell them, or
yeah,
you know,
when
don't shit on them.
When did we stop teaching people as well? Like, don't yeah, don't cancel everyone at everything. Like, just... Yeah. Like, talk, just have a conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Talk to people.
Yeah.
Talk to people, yeah. Like that was, and, okay, so we're nearing the end. So
okay,
I'll just say something really quick,
yes,
and then maybe we'll do a speed round on some of these other ones.
Okay,
but,
yeah, sorry.
There was someone who I won't name who wondered why we still can't say the N-word when, like, it was used for hate, so we should get rid of the hate and just everyone should be allowed to say it. And I say, well, the difference between, like, other swear words, let's say, compared to, like, the N-word is... It's the same thing as money. Sure, it's an illusion, and it's just a word. And so if you were to take context away from that word, it doesn't mean anything. But because there's a history behind it, and because society agrees that it means something, that's why you can't necessarily say it. So it's like, even if you're not necessarily racist and you just want words to not have stronger meanings, you agree to the contract of society
mm-hmm,
that we agree that the history behind that word is important enough to keep it where it is right now, which is as this controversial term.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's like, instead of just hating on that person for even saying that, like, fuck you. It's like, you can still feel like, oh, like, why do you think that? But like, at least tell them why.
Hey,
maybe
this
they
is,
never know.
This then, is why you shouldn't be saying this. It's
yeah, because
it's,
it is sensitive
yeah,
and it has history. Yeah. But anyway, okay, so we're in like the last few minutes.
Yes.
So
okay,
we can
let's,
do a speed round.
Speed round. Because
there's some that are going to be very simple.
Let's go.
So what is your opinion on tattoos?
Oh, all for them. If you want to tat up your body, do it.
Do
if you
it,
don't
nice,
want to tat up your body, don't do it.
Nice.
Sweet.
What is your opinion on the effect of dreams on one's mind?
Ooh.
Think they're important or nonsense?
I think they're a bit of both. I think that when you have a lot going on, you can dream about it, and there's definitely ways of being interpret it, but I don't think people should take them too seriously.
Yeah, true. Don't treat it the same as like
yeah,
reading the stars and this is what I should do. Yeah.
Exactly.
What is your opinion on the current plans to live on Mars by
oh,
Elon and NASA and the rest of them?
Well, honestly, you know how we were discussing one of those things to keep yourself concerned about and stuff?
Oh,
I don't care.
That one's out.
Honestly,
yeah,
don't give a shit.
Yeah,
do it if you want. Don't, I don't care.
Otherwise, you're not going to contribute. Yeah.
I can't see myself living on Mars, so
yeah,
I'm, you,
yeah,
whoever wants to do that, go for it, but I have no interest.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
What is your opinion on kids with social media?
Oh.
Do you think there's a limit that it shouldn't be allowed?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It's,
yeah,
it's, but it's also, how do you monitor that? And it's also being restrictive to children, which is, has massive, massively negative impacts. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that's kind of, it's shitty, but you can't really do anything about it because at
yeah,
the end, I think the best thing is to be respectful with children and make sure that they're, and I make sure that they're being safe, but don't restrict them.
Yeah, because otherwise they'll just do it harder.
Yeah, that's like exactly. I definitely say there's probably an age where I'd say when they hit maybe like the teens, that's what, maybe, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not a parent either, though, so I feel like I can't give advice in that way.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've now reached the end.
Oh,
thanks
wow.
for talking with me. Thanks for spending an hour just chilling and talking about
thanks
your life.
Thanks for having me. This was fun. We'll have to do it again.
Yeah, of course.
If and we can do collabs if people like me.
People,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh yeah, let's do a collab.
Yeah,
we'll do a roommate we could do a Mr. and Mrs. Like questions.
Questionnaire where I go, what about this?
Yeah.
What about that? And then
we'll have a whiteboard
exactly. Do like how
the
much
newlywed
the
game.
Person.
That's what it's called. The newlywed game.
Yeah.
Let's
play
that with the roommate.
So, as we say goodbye,
okay.
I always ask this.
Yes.
Do you have any parting words of wisdom that you would like to give the audience?
Oh.
Just on a day-to-day life. What are some...
Yes. Don't contort yourself to make to fit someone else's mold is my...
That's great. That's lovely. Yeah, I don't think anyone said that one. That's amazing. Great.
Great.
All right. Well, thanks for hanging out with us. And until next time,
thanks
adios.
For having me.